I'm here in Talla in the council buildings and I'm talking to Bertie Carey, originally from Kerry. Bertie, talk to me a little bit about your background. You're a Laird Campan man.
That is correct, yes. Born in 1934, a family of seven, out near the bog. There were lots of, our main thing was cutting turf near Laird Campan, Bournemouth. Actually, that was started about 1934, as I know, with the bog. The first famous machine came there, I think about 1940s, and there'd be huge industry there, cutting the turf. It's well-known fact now. But we boast about, we're the first people to have metric, because when the Germans came in, they measured by metric in Laird Campan. But anyway, as I said, we cut turf. We didn't have much. We had a whole of four or five, six cows. And big family, big awkward men. And we then, few of us went to, I went to the tech in Tralee in 1949, I think. 48, 49 would it be? Yeah. And then, as I said, I was there for 2.5 years. And learned nothing there, indeed. I tried my best, but I wasn't that clever, to be quite frank.
Yes.
and I stayed in Maidowell at a Mrs. Bowler in Maidowell for seven bob a week that time. I was there, you know, so my parents couldn't afford it, but of course I thought it was great. But we wandered around the town, the same thing, and I was not too clever, as I said before. And I left at 2.5 years, I think I was there.
Yeah. But going back to Laird Campan, did you know Con Houlihan? Would you have grown up with that?
Con would be Cast Island. He would be two miles. Laird Campan is about 7 miles from Cast Island. Con would be about 5 miles from us. He's just up the main road to Abbey Fields there. But he was often out. I think he taught out in Laird Campan to the teacher, right? And he also taught, I think, in Cordell. But he was, I didn't know him at all, no, by the way. I didn't know him that well at all. And I just heard of my brothers and my brother-in-law, because, as I said, later on, I went to England when I was 18 and a half.
Your father would have probably sold cattle in the same fair down in Castle Island.
Sorry, that is correct. That was my first day in town ever was in Abbey Field. In the horse and car of my father. That's now the old steel wheels, you know, in on bad roads. But the next one was going to the fair in Cast Island, the big wide street, and we drove a heifer or two or something in the morning at 3:30 in the morning, which was crazy. And everybody was doing the same thing. So, but anyway, we arrived in, walked into Cast Island, and tried to sell the cattle or whatever we had. And everybody was there about 6 o'clock, and then we probably sold the cattle and walked back again at that time. I think we had, I'm not sure if we had a horse and cart that time. We wouldn't have, no. No, we walked it. But it was when I was young, I was 12 or 13 that time.
Yeah.
And as I said, we had we had a very happy youth, but one thing that does stick in my mind is the long snow in 1947.
Oh, that was a bad
year now. Well, that was the year now that I really remember most, because we had nothing. The very hard to get flour or tea that time, and to get flour and make the bread. So my father went to Castle Island one day, not at Tralee, to get bread. And we really were hungry, would you believe it? You know, I have a big family. But he arrived home with some sort of mail or something, I don't know what it was now, you know. But he did. But as I said, we were cutting the trees for the... See, my father was not a good farmer really at all.
But why is that?
Well,
he just didn't pay attention to it.
Well, you see, there's seven children, right? And the poverty was something else, you know, at that time. And as I said, and he was in America before that for a year in New York for a year or two, came back. But we had no money, you see, and we had all of four cattle, you see, with 40 acres of ground, you see. And it was all bog, bog turf, but very bad bog and rushes. But we were born in a very nice place with the river Smeerla, there near it, and we learned to swim there. And you know, the nuts and the trees, it was a lovely place to be brought up.
Yeah.
But the poverty and the thing was a big thing. I found that time anyway, you know what I mean? And but otherwise we had a good time in one way, you know. But the father, as I said, was working there, and he was a fairly heavy man. Like, we were all big, awkward. I mean, about six foot tall, yeah.
And so you the rest, were you the eldest or were you in the middle
Oh, no,
somewhere?
I was the second youngest.
Were you?
The second youngest, yeah. Now, you know, well, there was Frances. She was a nun. She died, the poor girl, late short in England. And she left the nuns, poor girl, and left it, and went teaching for a while. But she got TB, and she died at home in Edinburgh. You know what I mean? That was in 1948, about
Yeah.
47, yeah.
And just to go back then, your father, the Careys, now were the
Yeah,
Careys there
the Careys
for
were a
how
very the
many
Careys were a very
centuries?
long. Yes, my grandfather was Edward Carey, and I think my great grandfather was Tighe. I think it was Tighe, but he was a drover. You see, my ancestors were very wealthy people. They were hurlers, people called hurlers, right? On the road, you see, my mother was Roach. In Corrie, and her family were they were Hurleys. They were wealthy, old-fashioned. They owned half the land around Argonne, and they collected in. So my people would be sort of half related to them, or the poor section. We can know the word, another word, you see, apparently. But that would be my grandmother now, right? My great grandmother,
Yeah,
you see.
and what ha so it was your father then, or your great grandfather would have married in
Oh,
there.
sorry. My father, my great grandfather was working as a drover
Yeah.
for the wealthy cattle drover. That time they drove cattle to Cork or something. Or, anyway, but he was the head drover. And they gave the Hurleys granted the land to my father, or to my grandfather. That's how we got the land. See, I think Kerry's originated from Cork. Outbranch of them anyway, you know.
Yeah.
So we, as I said, that's how we came
Yeah,
with the
and
land.
that's right. But you never had any intention of, well, you weren't the boy for the farm anyway.
No. But the land, then we got the land. And the brother Michael was the next owner. He went to Limerick. Then my next brother was Richard, and I had two more brothers. One a carpenter was living in England. Two more joined the guards then. But of course, I'm jumping ahead of you now, am
No, you're not indeed,
I?
but
No, I'm just saying the family. You want to know
yeah.
what the family did like, yeah.
Yes, yeah.
Well, as I said, the farm was divided between Edward, and then when he died, he divided the farm between my father and his brother, Edward.
Right.
Right? So it was actually a small, it was 80 acres for a start, so this was only 40 acres, you know. But the land was bad. And the you know, the rushes and bog and going to the creamery letter from pond as well, you know, to milk
Yeah.
and that, you know, I put it in the back of a horse and car and
So were you glad to get away from all of that when you went into Tralee to technical school?
well, that's a good question. No, I think I was. I was looking back, I wasn't that happy at all. And maybe I was happy because you wouldn't notice at the time, but I was delighted. You see, I never saw. I was learning in the school at Letterkenny Pond about the milk being delivered to the doors, right, in Tralee and the big cities. And I remember that the first time I saw milk being delivered was in Tralee, really. You know what I mean? You know, but I cycled in for 2 weeks, but I couldn't do it. But I stayed in Tralee then, as I said, for 2.5 years.
But Bournemouth made a big difference there, didn't they? Because
They did.
they brought employment and a bit of money locally to
Or they did. They did, you're right.
the bogland there.
Because there was nothing at all, as I can see, there was no industry. My father had a horse and cart that day, and he got £3 a week for 2 weeks. That's all the work he had. You know, £3 over with the horse and the car. But he was also breaking stones for a while
For the council.
for the council. Oh yeah, there was that. I remember that now, you know what I mean? But it was tough. But then again, everything when you look back was bad. But I don't think it was that tough at all, really. You know, I mean, we had enough to eat, I suppose. We had enough milk anyway, so we weren't hungry. The only thing, the only little drawback was the clothes. We were very sort of aware of other people having better clothes than we had.
Were the clothes handed down?
Well, they were half handed down, but I know one, myself and my brother went to school one year with no shoes in our feet now. But as it happened, it was a mild winter. And we did because we just didn't have the money, you see. But again, you wouldn't think that, you know, once you'd enough to eat. But I wouldn't say it's a shame, but I was never ashamed, really. You know, I'm very proud of where I come from. But I think at that sensitive age, maybe it was.
And
You know what I mean?
going into what you described as the big city,
Oh
truly.
yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah.
Well, that was your first experience was watching the milk coming and being delivered door to door
Oh
with
yes,
you.
oh gosh, yes, you
Yeah.
see, because we
And that
never
was
had
strange,
food.
wasn't it?
Well, it was probably strange to me, like it really meant nothing, but it was the horse and car and trolley at that time coming up and down, and you know, and the characters and trolley there as well. But I enjoyed it. Of course, as I said, you'd be John B. Cain out there, but he'd bring book about a corner by. You know, John B. read about the stall, you know, looking out the window. And he was dead right, because I remember in up and down the town there at the church there, and the corner by the well, and you'd be looking at the girls going up and down, you know, the young ones, and you'd be this and that, and you know, oldly or whatnot. And you'd be fancying this one and fancying that one. But the townie was always a bit, he could be on the act way better than we could, you see. And we were trying to copy them, but it didn't succeed. You know what I mean? But you know, they were all, they knew how to, if you remember, you could always walk down the town, that you know, they'd be dressed up, and you know, just sort of like they do in Spain, you know, they'd wander around the evenings, showing off, you know. But we did hang around the town, and went to Coffey's picture house there. There's either 4 or 8 pence in there. You know, to picture out coffees.
But did you feel there was always that difference between the townie and the man from the country and the
Well,
boy from?
it probably was most in the mind, you see, because we always had, I suppose it boils down to the cultures and the Jacobins now, that the country people always had the impression that the townies were too smart. And whether they were smarter or not, the country people looked upon it as they were bowsies laughing at them.
Is that right?
I think it's a frame of mind, and it's still there. Well, it's not so much now, but it was the 1970s here. Oh God, yeah, people put up too much aware. And a fella called Moriarty, years ago, I remember his son, got a job in Killarney in a hotel there. And the advice his father gave him, right? If you go down to town in Killarney, you see, and you see a horse, you see a donkey coming down the road with two heads, well, don't look at him. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? They're all looking around. You know, the idea of the country people are always looking around. You know,
Taking
everybody
in
knows.
everything,
Yes.
observing.
Observing, or else trying to, where am I? Starting to be lost. But I thought that was a very good description. If you see donkey with two heads, you know, don't pretend that he isn't there. Nothing new to you. You know what I mean, though, you know.
I do, yes, and that kind of I suppose trying to be as good or trying to be the same as the townies, is
Well,
that it?
complete waste of time, but that's quite true. Then what happened then was the country probably always maintained the town. Well, of course, until Donough O'Malley came on, let's face it was complete discrimination. I mean, like, you know, the bus, the free bus.
Oh, yes,
I mean,
yes.
you know, because the truth is that Castline has a school, and Tralee has. But we had to come into town, and there was no way to come into town. Which was a huge advantage. In other words, the people in the, I'm going to object about this. The people in the country were completely, in other words, you could be genius out of the country. And your parents had no money for a bike or for a car or for a horse and car. So you just stayed where you were. You could be genius in school. And there was quite a few now in my class. But that's what I'm saying. So I suppose it was important to go into town anyway, like, you know. But to my mind, looking back, that was bad set up, really, wasn't it?
Being stranded out in the countryside, is that what you're saying?
Well, nobody could.
Some families.
Nobody, the 99% of them finished up in national school. They never went further than that.
Yeah.
So they could not go into the take. As I said, I was lucky, so, but my father had probably less money than most. But that was the problem, that you had to either to get cycling, which was 11 miles from my place. And I wasn't a cyclist at all. I couldn't make it. It was too much for me, even.
But that would have been 22 miles.
I was round trip. All there and back, yeah. Well, in fairness, I was only there 2 weeks because I couldn't take it. You know, yeah. I'm now jacked.
And you stayed with this woman then?
Mrs. Boulder.
Where was she? In Clash?
She was in Meadowell.
In Meadowell,
yes,
yeah.
Up there. Isn't there a vet there somewhere?
But and anyway, did you board in that house then for 2 years?
I boarded roughly for 2 years.
Did you?
I did, yeah. But she was, I think she was the mother of, did you ever hear a man called Ben Bono? Ben Bono. The man that died there yesterday, you know the fellow Paul Gordon, did he die? Paul
yes,
Gordon.
Yes.
Well, this man was something. He used to do these road shows. Now, I never met the man now, but his mother was always talking about him.
Yes.
He called himself Ben Bono.
And he
a
was
nice
a
name.
Music or magician.
Well, he used to do these little shows. I was amazed when I saw him on the television there about 10 years ago, and his wife. They used to do these little shows. You know what I mean? You know the way the pictures in Dan Pariandi's hall, we wouldn't come to him yet, but I knew, I knew Dan well. But they used to have these shows, as I said, plays on the stage,
yeah.
Amateur. You know the way, and they used to go around the country, places, and have these little shows. But Ben Bolo was one of them, and they'd have these little acts, you know. But he's famous man. I didn't know he was at the time, though, you know.
Yeah.
But the mother was quite proud of him anyway, even though he never called back to see the poor woman at all, you know.
But he came out of that house that you boarded in.
Ben Bolo, yeah. Yeah, that's correct,
is that
yeah.
Right?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, I'm nearly sure that I'm not, unless she told porky pies now, she might be telling the fibs, but but a lovely old woman anyway, and we just go up and walk. So.
But what about the, you know, the Dan Paddy Andy? You knew that man, didn't
I know
you?
Him up there, very yeah. Well, and his family is, oh God, yeah, because he was a rogue, of course. He's famous for the wrong things, you see, that put too much emphasis on the Lent things. And the priest didn't want any dancing during Lent, you know what I mean? Mm. You see, that time. But Dan had a dance hall. He had a small one up near Castle Island, the Barnagee, up that far from Canahoula now. And then he'd one out in Lettercombe Pond, Dan Paddy and his cross, you probably don't, Dan Paddy and his cross anyway. He had a dance hall there, which I think was a wonderful thing now.
Yeah.
Because I went there and I was a young lad, I was only 15 or 16. But all the people who were 10 or 20 years older than me, you know, like it was a shed, a tin shed. And there was one or two accordions there. And they'd play there and the people would come from all around the bog area, like, walking, five, cycle, walking.
And they used to pack the hall? He used to pack the hall?
It was 6 months in.
Yeah.
And Dan's sight was not too good, you see. And the people just come and give him fake sixpences. You know what I mean? Yeah. But he's famous. He's famous for his dance hall, you see.
Yeah.
For one dancer. But he had a hard life as well because I think three of his children died of diphtheria. That was another one before TB, you know.
Yeah.
Diphtheria, that was a bad disease around 1940 for up to 50, but he lost two or three children in that, so he had a hard life. Now I knew he'd be about 20 years younger than my father, you see, so he's not dead. I mean, I knew him very well, like, I stay up there, I used to get a lift into Tralee, then did you from Starkens. Now he would be the man that was the manager of the bog. He was a German fella. He was a genius too, but he couldn't speak any English. But he was manager of the compound board in the morning.
Right, and he introduced the meters instead
that
of the
was same,
he
we
was
so
the
far
man
ahead.
Who was responsible
we
for
so
the...
far ahead of Europe. But there were several people working there that time. As you said, it was a huge industry.
Yeah.
But the Starkins, they'd be the sons now. They'd be awfully.
But Bertie, you didn't stay there. You decided to go to England. And at such a young age, why did you decide to go to England?
Well, again, I was young and foolish, didn't have a clue anyway. But the thing, like Corrycannon, where I actually come from, like Corrycannon is a townland in Leirgumpaun, which has about 7 or 8 townlands. You know what I mean? So Leirgumpaun is the biggest town. It's a huge area, like, you know, in the mountain, but there's townlands in between. It's all called Leirgumpaun, first off.
Yeah.
But as I said, Corrycann was a... the place, Emma Roach's pub now there, that would be my uncle now, right? Arl Roach, a famous pub down there.
That's up at the cross in Leirgumpaun, is it? Near the cross.
After Dan Paddy Andy's, yeah. Go down there, turn left, that's correct. But Jimmy Roach, his son, is still there and his grandson's there now. But the pub is very old there. It's a nice pub out in the country. You know, the guards will be watching there and they'll be watching the guards. But it was a famous pub. But the whole thing was cleaned out in the 1950s. I went there in 1952 now. But there was people who went there after the war and before the war, you know. So the whole Leirgumpaun used to be huge, houses, the population. Now, well, it was getting big, getting out the new houses and that, you know what I mean?
Right, but so when you were growing up there, the population was quite big, wasn't it?
Well, I think it was. Because, you see, there was an awful thing about America too. My father went in 1931, only for a few years, 2 or 3 years. He went right there during the recession in New York. Was that 29 or 31?
That was in 1932.
Was it 32? Yeah. Or to the England 29-30 was it anyway? Sorry, yeah. But he was there, and I don't know. He probably learned a bit about Blockland, but he came back. He was a great character to my father in that way. You know what I mean? But he was very ambitious for us. Like at that time, you see, he was always had the Irish press in the house. He might be 2 or 3 years old, you know. And no doubt that if there was ever a worshipper, but he did worship De Valera, my father, like.
Was he involved
depressed.
During the Troubles?
Well, no, but my uncles were. My uncles had what was on their own and all that in the Frank Column. And he was with D.G. Allman, I think, back there, won the battles around Castle Island. And he knew a fellow called Rory O'Connor.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the father of the, you know, but he knew him, Master O'Connor. Jimmy the Master, they call him. Well, I didn't know him until that before my time. But he was really involved, yes. And I had another uncle, he joined the guards in Limerick. He was a bit involved. But my father was never sort of involved at all. But he was a mad about De Valera anyway. I agree with him. I think 90% of the time anyway, he was right in his own way, you know. But he was really, I had an uncle next door, Paddy Carey, and just only 50 yards away. And every election, my father wouldn't. He'd been such a temper against the Fine Gael that he wouldn't talk to his brother till after the election. But he was really, he wouldn't fight now. But he was really, really in the doing. But he was a great man to push us to books and educate, and he used to get the press, as I said, a day late. So we always had the papers and books in the house, you know.
Yeah.
You know, fair play to him for that. And my mother then, as I said, our Lord's sister. Now she was always reading at night time under the candle, not the candle now, but the lamp. Of course, no electric. See, we had no electric there in 1956.
Yeah.
You see, so we were deeply deprived.
Sure.
But my mother used to read an awful lot as well, yeah, at night time. She read Ben Hur, the big book about Ben Hur, that colour now.
Yeah.
You know, but she did it about 10 times, but she was always...
she read it 10 times.
Well, I didn't know how many, but she always had it. But yeah. But then she, as she got older, then she went into Women's Weekly and the later books, you know.
But at the age of 18 and a half, you went off to
in July, that's correct, in yes. There was a man, he had a pub in Kilburn. It's called Billy Mulligan's now, but that time it was the Victoria Hotel in Kilburn High Road, right? And he managed that, and he was home on holidays with his wife. And I was working, so he said, if you want a job, you can have it, you know, in Kilburn. So I went over as a handyman barman. That was my title. I was doing the cellar in the pub in Kilburn now.
Yeah.
No, that was a huge culture shock as well. But the thing is that there were so many Irish over there that's insane. It's completely home from home in one way, you know.
How did you take to it?
Well, again, as I was young, you see, and foolish, that's the way. And when you're young and foolish, it can be a huge advantage, and it can be a disadvantage as well, you know. But no, I took it very well, actually. As I said, I was in the bar there, and then I graduated a full-time barman. But the people coming in there that time, they were all lovely. This was 1952 now, right? And the rations were... Even though at that time there was coupons for sweets, coupons for a few items in England that time. I mean, this was only 6 years after the war.
Yeah.
You see? So I heard all the stories from the English people about Germany and all the different yarns you hear about, and I was out there fighting, and half of them weren't, of course, you know, English people. But I learned an awful lot from there now, you know what I mean? You say if I enjoyed it. I did, because, there was a dance hall now, the Bamba at that time. That was in Kilburn. Now, there was dance halls everywhere, Irish dance halls. And, of course, we used to go there on a Sunday afternoon, you know, and dancers, you know, I'm chasing the young ones and never catching them, the man says. But then after a while, then I went to Hammersmith, right? From there, I went to Hammersmith, walked up there in the Windsor Castle in Hammersmith. And one thing that I wouldn't claim to fame, but I did see Laurel Hardy on stage in the Chiswick Empire. One day I was walking down, well, this would be 53, 54, but I was walking down the road anyway, and I saw the two we've seen tonight, Laurel and Hardy on stage, you know. But I went in to see him, of course. I'll have to see Laurel and Hardy, you know. They were crap. I thought they were, sorry, but the language. I didn't think, well, they were getting old. They remind me of the Bin Bonus little plays that we used to have at school.
Yes.
And you know the way the people used to come, amateurs, and abuse the children.
Yes.
You know, I often saw them there, and later they did too. It was good. But I thought they were, you know, I didn't think they were anyway at all. But that's what I'm saying. Sometimes it's better not to.
What you had
hold
actually.
Hold on to your dream.
Yes, your dream has gone out the window. But going back to, before we leave your time in the bar, you know, you had English people coming in and talking about the war years.
Oh, well, not so much there, because that was all Irish. There's no doubt I was only very few Irish anyway, you know. But I, as I said, I went up to Hammersmith, the one fellow used to come in there. And you see, when the Americans were in England during the war, you see, they didn't have that money. You see, they were all fine looking young fellows, you see. And they had money at that time. Actually, somebody was telling me that they got more money than what they get today. You know, the American troops over here were paid big bucks like it. And of course, in England, out of country, in different parts, in, as I said, in Reading, and they were all, you know, wherever there'd be barracks, and the Americans would be there, and the English locals. See, all the lads would be going after, poor lads, off to fight in Germany, right?
Yeah.
And of course, their women folk would be left behind. They'd come in, and the young fellas might be in the pub now, because I know that, but it's a fact. Young fellas now, you know, they'd be in the pub there, and the boys would come in, and they'd be chatting it up, of course, you see, buying their drink, you see, and then the Yanks would come in. And they said, "Hello, Dal, hello, Donnie," and give him chocolate and give him money, and they were off with the Yanks. So this fella, this I laughed at this old stupid old idiot in Hammersmith, and he was away, but in the Hammersmith Pally, right, that's near Hammersmith now. But he said, I went, she's gone dancing. He said to me, "Oh, good," I said. "Well, to be quite frank, I'm not that happy," as you say. "I don't mind if she dances with an English fella, but I don't want her dancing with a Yank." You know, but he killed him, and he had jealousy and everything.
Yeah.
You see, I know that I did an awful lot of things. But I heard all them stories. So, it's good.
What was Hammersmith like? Did you... You were there in the 50s. There were quite a number of Irish immigrants going over at that stage.
But every street, Kilburn High Road, from there up to Cricklewood. That's the famous Cricklewood, the Galty Moor. Now, I lived there, I was there thousands of times in the 90s, up to 19, never came back in 67. But there was thousands of, all the whole streets, Kilburn High Road, it was all Irish, simply Irish, you know. And then to go in there, now it's a different setup, of course, completely now different setup, you know.
And did you find, you know, that helped a bit, being amongst the Irish in England?
Well, it did, because as John B. Cain's song said there about Cricklewood, because an awful lot of people did grow up there.
Yeah.
I mean, they really had their youth there. And wherever you have your youth, I think you enjoy yourself. And people never forget that way, you know what I mean? But they were all young, not fella, wouldn't stay there. But no, I think that's a big thing why the Irish settled so well in England. Actually, come to think of it now, you know. Because they had money. See, if you take, just a small example, Lairicum Pond now, right? There was a fella cut turf there now in Lairicum Pond. And all of a sudden, this man came on. He was given 10 bob a day, 10 shillings a day for cutting from 8 o'clock until 6. And it was good. You'd have to work hard, mind you. And they were getting £3 for working hard, right? All of a sudden, then they went over to London, of course. And they were getting that for half day. So the big difference is the money.
Yeah.
And it went to most of their heads. But quite a few of them kept their heads though, you know, and saving the money.
Yeah.
But it was a huge jump up. Happiness with his money.
Did you get married?
No, when I was playing hard to get. I got married when I was 38.
So you weren't married when you were over there?
No, I wasn't. No, I got married to a Dublin girl here in Dublin in 1972. Yeah.
Well, talk me through the rest of your time in England. How long did you stay there?
Were you there? Oh, right. Sorry. I think I'm talking too much. No, I went to England, right, and then I applied for the Guards, right? The Guards here in Dublin.
Yeah.
Guards
yeah.
Corner, right?
Yeah.
And I failed the first time, and I passed the second time, and I joined the Guards in 1955 in the depot, in October 55. Went into the depot in 55, in the Phoenix Park depot, no, that time. And trained there, and then I did my... Then I went to Kevin Street after 6 months. And then I was there until 58.
Okay, now, being a guard, you didn't have much problem with height.
No, that was one thing. No.
But what were the qualifications? What did you have to do an exam?
As I said, I failed the first. Well, it was. It's actually the same exam. Old fellas said, it's harder than my time, you know, the usual thing, and easier. No, I think it's about the same thing. But it was important that time. But I failed the first time in maths, of course. But I went to a fella called Master Lynch to do lessons at night time in Lyre. That's down Rahee way now. And I learned more, and I passed the second time. That's insane. But it was a fairly high standard now. Well, of course, I can say it now, because you had to write a composition, and you had to, as I said, the Fair Brenig's Force. I remember that I relearned my Irish in reading that. But... And no, it wasn't that easy, no.
Hmm.
People say it's easy now. Other people say it's harder. You never know what. But I said I joined the guards then, and a fellow called Costigan. He was a commissioner. He's a civilian commissioner. And he was there until 1960. And a big mistake the government made by applying. There should be a neutral commissioner there. I still mean there's one big mistake the authorities made. You know what I mean now, sort of, they should never have. A fellow called Queen was the first guard commissioner. Good, honest man, I suppose, it's not at all. But no, it doesn't, to my mind, it was a big, huge mistake to make. You know what I mean? Because, you know, there's all the stories lately now. You know, I mean, it's gone completely. I know several guards, no ex-guards and whatnot, and they're shocked. I mean, 50 up in Donegal. And they were very serious crimes. And they continued their jobs and some retired. And people are not happy with that. That's a very bad example, I think, to give the people.
Where were you stationed?
In Kevin Street.
And what was work like?
Well, work was nice. It was, there's called reliefs, shifts, in other words. 6 to 2, 2 to 10, 10 to, you know, 10 to 6. Night work every 2 months, yeah. But I was stationed there in Kevin Street, Thomas Street, James Street. There was a big crowd of us that time. The funny part that time too, in my relief or my shift, say, that'd be about how many, 20 guards there, maybe not 18. But there was two fellas had the leaving cert that time. You know what I mean? Only two.
Really? Yeah.
That's all they had that time. And to be quite frank, in all my time, and that's no exaggeration now, I've never met a thick guard yet. I can say that maybe not because I was one of them.
Yeah.
But for some reason, they weren't. And the big mistake too that Dublin people say, should they run all country guards, you see, but there was always more Dublin guards in the guards than country. Because at that time, they couldn't serve in the county.
Yeah, they had to serve in the
So all the Dublin guards had to move out.
Yeah.
Out of country. So that's why that they are the Dublin people. You know what I mean? I mean, no Dublin guard at that time.
Yeah. You know. Working in Dublin as a guard, though, what was it like policing the town at that stage? Was it more difficult? We're talking about the late 50s now, isn't that right?
Yeah, 50, oh yes, yeah. 56 to 58, up to just 55 to 60. No, it was different completely because it's way different now. There were always gangs of youth, the teddy boys with the big blue suits, and they were a bit of a problem. But, I mean, a man called Lugs Brannigan now, Jim Brannigan, you might have heard of Jim, did you? Well, I knew Jim very well, a lovely man altogether, but a bit innocent in his way too. But a lovely man. But Jim, you know, Jim was built up like, what you call it now, like Eisenhower or the Desert Fox, you know, Rommel, built up to be a hero. That was, you know, that was a very good idea, like, because the people were actually afraid of Jim.
Yeah.
You know, and Jim was going, but a lovely, holy man, a lovely man. But the boys didn't like him that much. But not many, because, well, I don't mind, but I respect Mr. Brannigan, you know. But Jim was, as I said, a lovely man. A bit of vanity in him too, you see. But he loved being called, and he loved the courts.
Did he?
Oh God, he loved the courts. Yeah, but he would give.
Why it, was that? Because he could perform. Is it?
Well, he was a witness. You see, he knew all the judges, see, and they knew him. He was a sort of a character, but. Looking back now, I think you need a man like him, because the problem is now with the law, as I said, that if Jim could spot a troublemaker a mile away, and before he did anything, Jim would give him a clip across the ear, as Jeff said. You know, he wouldn't give him up and give him a clip and go home, you know what I mean? And if he gave him money a cheek, Jim would give him a clatter,
yes.
Which is fair enough.
Yeah.
I saw nothing wrong with that. But nowadays, I suppose it was bound to be taken too far. But Jim took liberties that way. But looking back on it, as I said, he was quite correct. Because he could...
He kept control, did he? Of the
he did.
Gangs.
And he kept control.
The troublemakers.
Well, he had a bigger name than what he was, actually, you know, but he didn't talk. But I think my brother was driving him in the squad car for a year or so, you know. He came out the squad car and he came out with his gloves this way, you know. But he'd never, to be quite frank, there was never a bad bone in Jim's body now, you know.
Yeah.
And he's got a Croke Park. He never missed Croke Park. And lovely. And he's really just... he do all great charity work, you know. But he had this, there was one time when he was in court, and as I said, he hated being called Lugs. Now, well, I know his son, I think I met him once, but, I mean, you know, people said, Jim Branning, oh, that's Lugs, you know, it was big, because he's got a big ear, you see, but people didn't mind, but he didn't like it. but he was in court one day, and this young lad was up there for some small crime. And the lad confessed it, whatever it was, and the judge said, well, you seem a nice young lad to me, don't you, that harmless lad, you see. Have you anybody here to speak up for you? Oh, no, Lord Branigan, well, I never saw the man in my life. And he said, Mr. Branigan, you know, that's him saying, you know, he was being vain,
yeah.
but a lovely man.
But did that make life kind of interesting for you at that stage, being a guard, you know, that being able to spot these things and, you know?
Well, to be quite frank, I would never claim to be a very observant guard, no, I must confess that. There was a thing in Dublin that time, and you hear him in Tralee, I'm sure, everywhere in town. He's a very strict guard. I said, actually, he'd never give you a summons, you know. But people are missing the point that the people that weren't issuing summons was a far bigger enemy to them than the strict man. At least the strict man was getting paid for his job, and he was doing it for his job. You know? But I was not a strict guard, which I was getting money on the false pretense for a while, I think. But the last 6 months, I suppose, I got a bit old, you know, a year or two older, and I did put on a few summons, because you have to put on summons anyway, you see, because you'd be there at night time, people ringing up the station, there's three cars passed across the road, I can't get past it, there's a guard walking up and down, you know, so you had to do something, you know. But I suppose it was a good garden for the shop, you know, but as I said, I was a young lad, and most of them were. But the work that time, guard one time, was very easy. Mm-hmm. Nowadays it's twice as hard. I accept that.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
When you were on the beat, were you with another guard, or were you on your own?
Well, I was on my own several times, but there were one or two streets down Dublin that I knew well. As I said, I was down the Liberties, old Dublin, and I know every inch of it very, very much, you know what I mean? And I still maintain that half the historic things aren't kept there now, you know. But I know it was the poverty there, it was, well, it probably wasn't, yeah, it was about the same as we had in Lyre. But the poverty was from the desperate. Yeah, and they really had nothing, but they were lovely. What I mean, harmless people. They're not harmless now, but they wouldn't... The funny part that I believe 200 years ago, it was really rough in Dublin. 200 years ago, with the butcher by the gangs,
yeah.
That you really couldn't walk out. You know, there was no law and order then. But I think since 1915 or something, it was, you know, the law came in, you know, very strict then.
Yeah,
you know,
and so, but why didn't what happened? Why didn't you stay on in the guards if you liked it?
I don't mind. Oh yeah, anyway, I used to join the job. As I said, there wasn't it wasn't a hard job really, but there was some very, very good guards in it, and I enjoyed it to probably enjoyed it too well, and it was a good social life that time. I mean, we thought anyway, as young lads, of course you would, you know. But anyway, we went out. We wanted to know what did happen. Oh, my complete fall from grace, yeah. Thursday night we got paid in Kevin Street in that time. And of course, we all got dressed up in lovely blue, lovely suits and lovely people. So we said we'd go for a drink. So we went out for a local pub in O'Dea's there near Jacob's factory where it used to be. And then went into town, O'Mara's. And somebody suggested we'd go to, believe it or not, to Kennedy's of Old Barn in Tala. Bonafide that time. And, you know, and anyway, we had a few refreshments to a man at that stage. So we hopped in a bus for Tala, bonafide. Brady Gallagher was going very strong that time. And whatever we did, we had a row amongst ourselves, right? And we fought, and there was one civilian got a clip, no, fell against him. A door, see, we were all big men, big awkward men. And there was a door knocked out. That's all that was done. So word went to Tala Garda Station. And an inspector and two squad cars came and arrested us. We were put in the Tala in the station down where the old the old Tala Garda Station, the old one. We were put in the cell there, and we were left out at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? And we went to, anyway, we got Herman Good. He was a solicitor that time. He was a judge, didn't he? But we were suspended for 2 months. The court case came up in Rathfarnham, and we were fined something like £15 each or something and paid expenses, and that was it. But the judge, he said, well, to see, I can see, to see what happened, to see, but I hate to think what your authorities will think about it. So that was the word that did it. The commissioner, not the commissioner, but the superintendent panicked, and he asked us to resign. Oh, yeah. You know, but that was the discipline that time. And I became an expert snooker player over that time. You know, the snooker table in the barracks, great. And I said, so we were just asked to resign. I was 24 at the time. I didn't really worry too much at all at that age. You wouldn't, you know. And I and the boys didn't. My sisters and my brothers and that, they were upset and all that, losing my job. And of course, I was probably so innocent as whatever it is at the time that I didn't worry too much about it. But anyway, if we didn't go, we wouldn't get a reference.
Was that it?
Yeah. So we could afford the case.